This is 4:55 on Monday, October 17th. Orbit. Good morning.
So the chapter 4 homework is due tonight, I believe. And that makes... No?
Friday.
Oh, that makes me so happy. Because I was thinking...
You almost made us so happy.
Because, so don't turn it in. Actually, don't turn it in today. I need to go reset the turn-in page so that it corresponds to that assignment. So it's not due. Good. I was worried about that because we're still talking about materials that's on the homework. On Wednesday, we're going to talk about the next programming project. The question has come up, what language do we have to write it in? As I said, something reasonable. C or C++ or C# or Java or Python or something like that. It will be sort of up to you
now as you like and explore the way that the networking interfaces work in some other language potentially. Hopefully, if you do it in another language, you will see the C version of the interface sort of shining through, and hopefully that will help understand why it is the way it is in the other language, and that's why we do C for the first one. So that's on Wednesday. Today, we're going to talk about routing and routing algorithms, and sort of give the background on that and hopefully get to the actual routing and the internet piece, but we won't worry too much about it. If we don't, there'll be time on Wednesday to take care of that if we need to. So before I go on, any other questions for me? Logistics. As I said, don't turn in the Chapter 4 assignment until I change the page to say this is for the Chapter 4 assignment. It gets messy if it's turned in as a project. So. Right. So remember, this is review, hopefully, at this point, that what goes on in a router is we have a forwarding table. The forwarding table governs the thing that the router has to do fast, which is forward packets. And where does the forwarding table come from? It comes from the routing algorithm, which is a... It's closed. That's a Windows trick. That was a MacBook, so I don't know. Just goes to show. Whoever. The forwarding table is created by the routing algorithm, which displays time scale, then does forwarding itself. So what we're talking about today is the routing algorithms. So those of you who've taken Math 216, I hope, have a recollection of the idea of a graph, and maybe even 350. Did we have talked about graphs in 350 a bit, maybe? But not everybody has taken Math 216, so let me just go over this abstraction. So the people who would not have taken 216 would be the people who are in the EE version of the course, right? And maybe you haven't seen things about graphs. Is that right? The abstract notion of a graph. Okay? So here's the idea. The graph abstraction, is that we have a set of nodes and we have a set of edges. And this crops up in EE as well, because this is how programs that do things like placing and routing also be dealing with graphs, right? So same, hopefully, this is not new to anybody. So graph is a set of nodes and a set of edges, which are pairs of nodes. And, you know, in a computer program, we can represent a graph in a number of different ways. So what sort of ways have you seen for representing graphs in computer programs? So a matrix where the rows and the columns are both nodes, right? The rows and the columns are both nodes, and there's a non-zero entry in a position in the matrix where there is an edge between that, between the row and the column, right? That's one way of doing it. I said a non-zero entry. What might the non-zero entry be?
Infinity.
What would that mean?
It's not a node directly connected to the node you're looking at.
Okay, so you're using non-zero to mean
literally
non-zero. Okay, so infinity might mean that the cost of getting from A to B is infinity. That is, that there's no direct connection between the two. I'll just say what you said and go with it. Other representations use zero to mean no direct connection, and one to mean a direct connection, that is the presence of an edge. Other variations might use infinity to mean no direct connection and a smaller value to mean a direct connection with a particular cost. So this, in this representation, for this graph, we might have, say, an entry at the UV position of 2, to say that the cost of getting from U to V is 2, okay, by that edge. So that's one representation, this one of matrices. What's another representation that you might use? Have you ever implemented graph algorithms using anything other than a matrix representation? How about an edge list? Right? So just a list of the edges. U, where each entry in the list is a pair of nodes. So V, UX, UW, but not VY. And that's the representation. So in networking, what we're doing with this abstraction is we're letting N, the set of nodes, stand for, initially we'll say, a set of routers. But another way to think of it is as a set of networks. Not usually of hosts, right? Because we group, as you'll remember from last few lectures, we group the hosts together into subnets, and everything on a subnet is directly reachable by everything else on the subnet. So the only thing that matters is how do we get to the router that's on that subnet. So the nodes represent routers or subnets, and the edges represent links between routers and subnets. And what do the numbers mean? Well, they're costs. And what would be sensible things for the cost to be? Well, it might be the delay over that link. It might be the load that's on that link. But at this stage, we're not going to worry too much about that and just say that it's the cost. We're going to talk this abstractly for a while. So the cost of getting from U to V over this edge is 2. What's the cost of getting from U to W? Well, that's the cost of a path. So it depends on how we go. If we go from U to X to W, it's cost 4. If we go from U to X to Y to W, it's cost 3. And if we go either UVW or UW directly, it's cost 5. And so the routing problem is, in general, thought of as finding the least cost path between two nodes. And, in fact, between a node and all the other nodes in the graph. Right? Questions about that? So far? Well, so routing algorithms come in two general flavors. There's what's called the global flavors and two variations on. So the two flavors that we're mostly going to focus on are the so-called global algorithms, where every node that's doing this routing computation, remember every router has to somehow populate its forwarding table based on the routing algorithm. Every router, we assume, knows the entire topology of the network and figures out its forwarding table on the basis of that. So that's the global perspective. The more localized or decentralized perspective says that a router sort of sits in the middle of the network and learns things about its neighbor, learns things from its neighbors about the network, and somehow this enables it to figure out what to do for its forwarding table. We're going to talk about both of those algorithms. This static or dynamic stuff is not as major as the other one. But it's a practical matter that in real networks, links come and go. Links go down, links get slow, routers crash. And so the advantage, thinking of what we talked about early on of the packet switching network, is that it can adapt to that. And so there definitely needs to be some sense in which the routing algorithm can adapt to the coming and going of links, routers, whatever. So, for our first algorithm, we're going to look, or first collection of algorithms, we're going to look at what is called the link state algorithms. These are global algorithms in which, again, we assume that each node knows about the entire topology of the graph, all the other nodes, all the costs, all the edges, etc. And the one we're going to look at is the so-called Dijkstra least cost path algorithm. Now, he just calls it Dijkstra's algorithm here. The problem with that is that there are many Dijkstra's algorithms for different problems. Edsger Dijkstra is like if John von Neumann and Alan Turing and Alonzo Church are the original ancestors of computer science, then like Dijkstra and Anthony Hoare are the next generation. Okay, so Dijkstra was one of the sort of giants of computer science starting in the 1960s. And, you know, he's most famous for a monograph called Go To Considered Harmful. Maybe you've heard of that, which led to the whole idea of structured programming, which you probably haven't heard called that. Right? Anybody heard structured programming? I'm seeing a lot of frowns. So structured programming is the idea that instead of writing our code by, say, doing this, do this, do this, and then go to over there and do that and that, and then go to somewhere else and do that and that, instead, we should write our code with just a few organizing principles, which are if, then, else, and while loops, and for loops, and functions, basically. And this was revolutionary in 1960. Now it's just the way we do things. Right? You
you didn't even learn about the other way of doing things. But in the 60s, people were starting to be overwhelmed by code that was written in this other style. And Dijkstra's go-to considered harmful paper was sort of the start of this idea, start this program. Okay, so Dijkstra is famous for many things. This is one of the algorithms he's famous for. He's also famous for algorithms that you are primitives you've encountered in operating systems. The P and V semaphore primitives were actually from Dijkstra. Anyway, so to call this Dijkstra's algorithm is only works in this very narrow context that we know that we're talking about least cost paths. Long diversion, but your history lesson. Okay, so it's a global algorithm, and it is based on the assumption that all the nodes know all the costs, all the lengths, and everything. Everybody has all of the information, and so everybody will compute compatible paths because they all do the same thing. When I say compatible paths, is that if nodes have different ideas about what is the optimal way of getting somewhere, what can happen? Loops, right? A packet goes into one place, it says, oh, it should go there next. That guy says, oh, no, he's the one who's got the optimal path. And then it just goes around and around, and that's why we have what? Time to live in the packet headers. All right. So what we're going to do is focus on the behavior at just one router or one node. And what our goal is to find a forwarding table that tells us the next hop on the optimal path to every other node in the network. That's the goal. And that will be our forwarding table. And we'll save that. Save that remark for later. So get used to some notation. CXY is the cost of getting that's a little misleading. Cost of that CXY, C here stands for cost, and it's the cost of getting from node X to node Y, and I want to take out that word link there because I think we're going to use it differently than that. Well, just think of it as the cost of getting from X. all right, it'll work. This is the cost of the edge from X to Y. Okay. D is the cost of the best estimate that we have for getting from the node where we're running the algorithm to node V, wherever that may be. P of V is the predecessor node along the source, along the path from the source being the place we're running the algorithm, to node V. And we'll use this notion n prime to mean the set of nodes whose least cost path is already known as the algorithm runs. So we're going to start out on the next slide. So, we're running this algorithm at node U. Okay. This is all relative to being run at node U. And when we start out, what do we know? We know the cost of getting from node U to node U, right? And that cost is zero, right? We're already there. Can't have any cost to do that. And then for all of the other nodes, for the other node V, if V is adjacent to U, then we initialize our best estimate for how the cost of getting to V to be the cost of that direct edge from U to V. Straightforward. And if V is not adjacent to U, then our best estimate for getting to it is infinity, that we can't get to it at all. our initialization. And then, having done that, we then go into this loop where we pick a node that's in this, that's not in n prime, that is, we don't know the cost of getting to it, but we have we've got some costs, so some one of those is the minimum, the smallest one. We're going to do an example of this. We'll get both ways. We'll pick the one that's minimum. And the amazing thing, and this is, of course, what Dijkstra figured out that made this Dijkstra's algorithm and not somebody else's, is that when you pick the one that's minimum here, amongst all the ones that you haven't already decided are minimum, that one is minimum. And so that one gets added to the set of things we're done with, and then we do this step of saying, well, what do we know about the neighbors of W? Can we improve the cost of getting to it? So you're going to want to study this,
but let's work through it as an example. So we're going to be working with this graph, and we're running this algorithm at node U. Right? That's important.
And we start out by saying, we know the cost of getting to node U is zero. And then we fill in this row,
the top row, with the cost of everybody else.
Right? So for the nodes that are adjacent to you, so that's Y, W, and X, we put in 5, 3, and 7. Hopefully that's right. Sorry, this is not Y, this is V. So from U to E is from U to W is 3, from U to X is 5. And we also record that the predecessor, our best notion of the predecessor for those nodes is U itself. With me? Straightforward. And then we're done. So what's our next step? Our next step is to pick the thing in this row that is minimum and sort of work with that. So the next thing that's going to happen is that we'll add W to this set over here, and then we'll do some further exploration. All right, so now what we do is we look at node W and we look at its neighbors that are not in N prime. So that will be X, V, and Y. And we say, okay, if we went to W first, could we get to any of those neighbors with lower cost than we already have as the estimate? So, the cost of getting to W is 3, and 3 plus 4 is 7, and what does our table say about X? It says 5. So that one's no better than it was before. 3W, V is 6, and that is better than it was before, so we're going to get something new here. And 3, 8Y is 11, and that's better than we had before, so we'll put something there. So let's see what happens. Okay, so this one didn't change. This one got better. This one got better. This one didn't change. And we're done with this column, right? We've already said that W is the best it can be, so we won't write anything more in that column.
All right, next step. Choose the minimum. What's the minimum in that row 1? X. Okay? So X is going to get added over here, and then we will figure out what else to do. All right.
So now, let's see, U and W are already in the set. So X also has neighbors Y and Z. So the cost of getting to Z through X is 5 plus 9 is 14. So that will change here. The cost of getting from here to here is 12. So that won't change because it was already 11. And V won't change because it's not a neighbor of X. Okay? So
next. Okay, so ones that don't change, you just bring them down. And ones that change, you write them in. And the ones that we're done with, we don't do anything more. Okay. Next one. Who's next?
V.
V, right? It's the smallest. So we add V here, and then we'll see what happens. Okay, so V, here we are. So now this one is interesting because we have, well, the only neighbor of V that we don't already have in our M prime set is Y. So that's the only one that could possibly change. And how do we do this? So let's refine our sort of mental process for this algorithm. Up to now I've been sort of tracing paths to see what the cost is. But what we really want to do is we want to take this cost, the cost of getting to V, which was 6, and add the cost of going from V to Y, which was to get 10. We don't want to trace back through the history. We just want to say this cost was 6, this adds 4 to it, now we have 10. Okay. And that's for Y, that's an improvement. Okay, so we'll do that 10V there and bring down Z.
Okay, Y is now the obvious candidate, so we'll do that one. And we'll ask for Y's neighbors who are not already in prime, which is Z. Does adding 2 to 10 improve on what we already know? Yes, it does. And so that will be the one we do.
Okay, and then finally done. Okay, so that's an algorithm that you need to be able to do like this, on a table like this, for the exam.
Just be completely clear. For the exam, you need to be able to do that. We'll do another one here in a second. Maybe a little faster. Okay, so now the next trick is, how do we go from this to a forwarding table? Right? What we really wanted to know was for each node, what should the forwarding table at U say? So what is the forwarding table going to say? It's going to say who we should go to first, not who we should go to last. So let's see. Well, for W and X, it's clear that traffic should be set to W and X, right? Because U is directly the predicate. And in this row, it says, just before getting to V, I should be at W. How do I get to W? Well, I look at my table and I say, oh, I send it directly to W. For this one, it says, how do I get, V is the immediate predecessor of Y, so how do I I get to be.
I look at my table and it says, oh, I go to Delta. And here it says immediately predecessor of previous Y. So how do I go to Y? I go to Delta. Okay. That was pretty abstract. You didn't write down that. So you may want to go sort of figure out exactly what code you would write to do that. Yeah.
So after you write the table, is it, do you go from your destination back to the source?
That's essentially what you do. So we could do it this way, right? We could say from I want to know the predecessor. I want to know where U should send in order to get to Z. It sends to Y. It's supposed to send to Y first, and in order to get to Y, it was supposed to send to V first, and in order to get to V, it was supposed to send to W first, and W is a direct successor. So W is the answer for Z. All right, here's a question. Ties can exist, and they can be broken arbitrarily. So my question is, do they have to be broken the same way at all the nodes in order to avoid loops? I don't think so. I think that each node can have its own tie-breaking algorithm as long as all the nodes are doing this, and everything will be fine, because a loop is going to have a higher cost than the optimal cost, and since this algorithm is defined to find the optimal cost, I don't think it's possible to have loops. But it's a good question, right? It's something we would have to worry about. Yes?
Wouldn't the best way to break a tie be to choose the path with the least amount of routers that you touch on the way there, so there's less time sitting on the router?
So that would be better, to sort of favor shorter paths over longer ones. There could still be ties, right? So that might not be a sufficient rule to break ties. But it's a first step and a good idea. But that also raises the issue that we're sort of talking here about an abstraction. The costs here are sort of undefined as to what they are, and so the cost might all be one, and in which case all we're doing is counting the number of hops. Here's another one. Let's see, what does he do here? Oh, so for this one, they filled in all of the table all at once, and we just need to read the table, sort of follow through how the table got constructed. So for this one, again, starting at node U, we have immediate neighbors V, X, and W. So those get filled in with the direct link costs, infinity for the rest. Pick the minimum one, add it over here, and then see where we can get from, and X over here is zero. We get from X, we can get to V with cost 3, W with cost 4, and Y with cost 2. But we already had a better route to V, so that just comes down. But this one improves, and this one improves.
Now we do have a tie. And I guess to follow along with what they did here, they picked Y. They picked Y, added it over here, took a look at Y, and said, all right, the cost to get to Y was 2, so from Y we can now get to Z for a total cost of 4, to W a cost of 3. Okay, so that one changed. That one changed. Okay, the lowest cost one is there, is V. V now has 5 to W, 4 to X. Nothing else changes, so those just come down. And then this one is the smallest. So we have Y. We have W, and that was added. And then we're done. Okay.
So that's Dijkstra's algorithm. And so what we get out of that is a tree, actually. So what's a tree? In relation to a graph, in relation to the notion of a graph, what is a tree? A graph with no cycles, right, is a tree. And this is what's called a rooted tree, because we have a particular node in mind as the root. And so we have a tree that connects you to all of the other other nodes. The path from you to every other node is the least cost that it can be. And as a result of that, the overall weight of this tree, which is what you get by adding up all the cost of all the edges, is also so how much does it cost to do this computation? Well, if you think about it, a node is going to add one other node to the set n prime every time it goes around that loop. Right? So there's n times around the loop, and at each iteration it has to find the minimum. Okay? And using the naive algorithm, finding the minimum amongst all of the nodes that are left, there's one less left every time, so that's n times n plus 1 over 2. So there's that first n, and then there's n plus 1 over 2 on average comparison in every go. So the overall complexity is what we call big O n squared. Now, it's that big because we did something stupid, right? We know that we can get the minimum repeatedly of a remaining set of nodes by doing what? Sort. And we know that sorting has complexity n log n. Optimally by comparisons, so it's easily possible to turn this into an n log n algorithm instead of a order n squared. I find this a very odd remark to insert right here. Oscillations are possible if the support length, if the link cost is equal to the amount of carry traffic. Oscillations are possible. This just means that when we add another connection across a link, we increase its cost. The result of that can be that this algorithm will oscillate because the cost of a link goes up. That causes us to recompute paths. which causes us to move traffic to other links and thereby cause them to be overloaded and sort of this can oscillate. The reason I find this an odd remark to make at this point is because it has nothing to do with this being a link state algorithm. Right? There's it has to do with wanting to find the optimal cost when the costs are changing. And so, and the costs depend on the routing algorithm, so it's not surprising that they should oscillate because, you know, you're... So anyway, has nothing to do with link state. But it's a good thing to know, right, that if you allow the cost to depend on the output of the routing algorithm, then oscillations can happen. All right, so that was our global algorithm where everybody knew the topology. Now we're going to move and talk about the distance vector algorithm, which is distributed, more localized vector. Yes?
So, besides the cost, what else can you think about?
Oh, besides the load, you can make it depend on the length, right, the time. You can make it depend on the bandwidth. You can make it depend on some function that depends on both the actual distance and the bandwidth. So there are a lot of things that it could depend on that don't vary with the router. So how about distance vector? We'll just get started on this and then we won't be able to finish. So distance vector is based on a technique that was created by another pair of giants of that second generation, Delman and Ford. They didn't really consider themselves computer scientists so much as operations researchers, which is interesting. And they invented something called dynamic programming. Have you encountered dynamic programming in some class? No?
Yes. We're just now talking about it in 350.
Just now talking about in 350. Excellent. Okay, so this is a dynamic programming approach to doing things. And it is based on the idea that if we already have a least cost path from X to Y, we want to know the least cost path from X to Y, we can observe that that least cost path is the cost of getting from X to B plus the cost of getting the optimal cost of getting from B to Y for any neighbor of X. Okay, so let's see if I got a picture of this. Don't look at the equations yet. So suppose I want to get from U to Y. Okay? Then what that equation says is that what I have to do is figure out the least cost way of getting to Y from all of the neighbors of X. All the neighbors of U, which are X, B, and W. So the least cost way of getting from U to B by going first to W is what? 6, right? Because I first go to W, and then I say, what's the least cost way of getting from W to Y? And there's least cost of 1. Okay, so that's 6. The least cost way by getting first to V is Well, it's 2 plus, I guess, 3 is 5. And the least cost way of getting from U via X is 1 plus 1 is 2. So that's the least cost way overall. Is I've tried out all the possible ways of starting, and I found the best one was X. All right? And what we do is we do this sort of recursively or iteratively. In order to figure that out. But what we'll do is we'll do it recursively, and what we'll find is that it results in optimal paths. Okay, so I just did it for Y. They want to do it for Z. So they want to do it for C. Well, they're going to do it for all 3 of the neighbors of U, which are B, X, and W. And so if I'm already at B, then the optimal cost for getting to C is 5. If I'm already at X, the optimal cost is 3. If I'm already at W, the optimal cost is also 3. So that then says that the cost from U to Z is add the cost of getting to each of those nodes and see which one is best. So that's 2 plus 5. 5 plus 3, and 1 plus 3. Okay, that's these 3 things. So the best one is 4, and we'll pick X. Our first hop. But as I said, that shows you that the equation sort of works, but it doesn't give you an algorithm because there's this step. It said I already knew that the best route was something, and how did that come about? Right. So what is going to happen is that we're going to have each of these nodes will be figuring out its best estimate of the cost of getting to every other node. And then it's going to share that information with its neighbors, which are then going to update their estimates based on what they've received. That's the overall plan of how this works. So you could implement this this Bellman-Ford approach as a centralized or global algorithm that you just ran at every node, in which case it would look actually very much like Dijkstra's algorithm. But what we're going to do with it is instead we're just going to have each of these nodes sort of doing its own thing based on this equation, and what we'll find is that it actually converges to the optimal as time goes by. So next time we will do that. All right. Any questions about this? Okay. So next time we'll do this distributed algorithm, and then I'll talk about the project, which is an implementation of that distributed algorithm. So,